Right, now then, a little while ago we were looking at how can I become more godly, and it's the sort of series we're doing, how this, how that, how can I become more godly, and we looked at part one last time, and we're really moving on the lines of how can I change my behaviour, can I become more holy by just doing holy things? Why is it that my aim in the Christian life is always greater than my reach, my desire for holiness is never equaled by my attainment to holiness? And why is it that some Christians get locked into this sort of a rather depressing downward spiral where they think, I need to be more holy, I've got to try harder, do better, but as they try harder and do better, they're just left feeling more and more guilty, more and more a failure, and the more guilty they feel, the more of a failure they feel, the harder they try, and the more the downward spiral seems to continue. And to answer those questions, we looked last time at Galatians chapter 5, so come with me this evening to Galatians 5. And we began by looking at the flesh and the spirit. And Paul says, Galatians chapter 5, verse 16, I say then, walk in the spirit, and you shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. For the flesh lusts against the spirit, and the spirit against the flesh, and these are contrary to one another, so that you do not do the things that you wish. Opposites, flesh, spirit. What do we say Paul means by the flesh? What do we mean by the flesh? The old nature, yes. Anyone want to add a bit more to that? I was going to say flesh it out, but you know what I mean? It is the old nature. Self-centeredness. Yeah? Any other throw-in comments? It's all those things. It is tied up with our literal flesh as well. Yes, it's belonging to a... Yes, it's... My existence is woven, isn't it, into the fibres of a cursed world. I'm part of this world. I was born into this world. I live in this world. I'm part of this world. It's a cursed world. I'm made of the dust of this world. My flesh is made of the dust of this world. I'm part of this cursed world. So I'm part of this corrupt, dying, degenerating system, and that's why I'm given over to death and corruption. And the word which the Bible uses for that, and you know, we've said it's the me, it's the old nature, it's all those things, but the word which the Bible gives to describe that existence in this body of death, in this cursed world, is the flesh. That's the flesh. So what's the spirit? More of a straightforward question, probably. What's the spirit? Well, the flesh and the spirit. So what's the spirit? Yes, it's a new you through the Holy Spirit of God, the Spirit of Jesus Christ. Because the point we made last time is that can I escape the flesh? Well, I can't escape the flesh by myself, can I? Because the only resources I can call upon are me. So if I try myself to escape the flesh, I can't escape the flesh. So from outside this creation, from outside this cursed world, God's Spirit, he comes in. And just as I've been born into the realm of the flesh, that which is flesh is born of flesh. So I am born by God's Spirit, born from above, born again into a new realm, the realm of the Spirit. And I become part of a new creation. One day that new creation will fill the entire redeemed universe. For the moment, it's just found in God's people. But I'm part of the new creation. So that from now on, I live in this present evil age, as Paul calls it in chapter 1, by the realities of the age to come. I live in this body of flesh by the power of the Spirit. We become part of the new creation, but obviously we're still existing in the old creation. And that is what leads to the conflict. Because if you like, we're living in two worlds, two zones, aren't we? There's the realm of the spirit, and there's the realm of the flesh, and we inhabit the overlap. We live in two realities, the flesh and the spirit. One of those realities is passing away, the flesh. Soon all this cursed world will be gone. It's passing away, but I'm still made of it, aren't I? I'm still made of this earth. I'm still made of the dust of this earth. And one of the realities is yet to fully come. It's begun, but it hasn't yet been completed, the realm of the spirit. So I live in these two worlds, two realities. And of course, the language of the flesh is me, me, me. And the language of the spirit is him, him, him. It's all about Christ. So when we serve Christ, the flesh says, well, what about me? And when we behave like we did in our unconverted days, the spirit says, what about him? So I've got these two things going on inside me all the time. What about me? What about him? What about me? What about him? And I'm living in this sort of conflict zone. So the answer to the question is, why is it hard to pray? Because we read verse 17, the flesh lusts against the spirit. The flesh is pulling me down, saying no. But then why is it hard to lie? Well, for the contrary reason, and the spirit against the flesh. Hence I'm in this constant state of conflict. And these are contrary to one another, so that you do not do the things that you wish. Constant conflict is going on. And hence the whole issue. Why am I not more holy? Hence the question we're asking. How can I become more godly? So that's just really just to bring us up to speed. And hopefully that gives us the framework of what we're talking about. The flesh. We're born into the world. That which is born of flesh is flesh. But when we're converted, we're born again. Born from above. And we receive a new nature. Born again by the Spirit of God, but it's a new nature still in this old body, and all that means. Okay, so if we understand the framework, we can then get to grips with Paul's argument about really how can I become more godly. Okay, so I think this is really helpful stuff. I don't mean this Bible study is really helpful stuff. What I mean is the subject. I think if we as God's people get this subject, it is a transforming thing. It's really revolutionary. It does change everything. So let's see if we can follow Paul's argument. We'll just go through it. We won't read it all the way through. We'll just deal with it as we go through it. Okay, so Paul says in verse 13, he says, for you, brethren, have been called to liberty. Now, you do not use your liberty as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love, serve one another. So does Paul Christ has set you free? Are we saved by keeping the law of God? Are we saved by keeping the rules? No, we're saved by Jesus Christ. Does that mean then we throw the rules away? If I'm not saved by keeping the rules, do we get rid of the rules? Say, I'm free. I don't need anything like that anymore. I can do as I please. No, says Paul. Okay? You've been called to liberty. You've been set free by Christ. You don't have to keep the rule book to be saved. You can't do it like that anyway. Only do not use your liberty as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another. So far from living as you did in your unconverted days, says the apostle, we are now to love one another. We're now to live for others. It's no longer me, me, me. It's what we can do for others. We put ourselves out. We serve one another. And then he says, verse 14, for all the law is fulfilled in one word, even in this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. So Christians no longer slavishly follow the rule book. You remember Paul is writing to Galatians, and men from Jerusalem, professing Christians, Jews, have come and said, oh, Christ can only take you so far. You've got to complete your salvation by being good Jews. You've got to keep the rule book. So that's what Paul is dealing with. So Christians no longer slavishly follow the rule book. Why? Because the rules no longer matter? No. But because now through the Spirit of God, I am capable of true holiness. This is the point he's making. I can do so much more than just follow the rules. I can actually fulfill the real intention of those rules in the first place. I can fulfill the law by loving my neighbor as myself. For all the law is fulfilled in one word, even in this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Let me give you an illustration to sort of perhaps illustrate what we're saying here. Here's a king. Okay? In the king's palace there are rules. And the rules might be speak respectfully of the king. Don't pilfer. Those sorts of things. Now, the king has lots of servants. What do the servants do? Well, the servants respect the rules. They carry out the king's written instructions as far as those instructions go. So they do speak respectfully of the king. They don't pilfer. But living in the same palace is the king's son. Now, does the king's son follow those rules? Does he? What do you think he does? Do you think he follows those rules? He does follow those rules. But in a sense, he doesn't need to follow those rules in the same way the servants do. Why? What makes his behaviour different from that of the servants? He's the son. What will he do as the son that the servants won't do? Sorry? He loves the father. Yes, the servants haven't got a relationship with the king as a father-son. So they will keep the rules. They'll do what they're supposed to do as the servants. But the son has a different relationship with the king, doesn't he? He loves him. He's a son. It's a father-son relationship. So he doesn't do anything that the rules forbid. See, in that sense. But actually, he goes so much further than a narrow interpretation of those rules. So when the rule says, do not pilfer, okay, he doesn't think, oh, I better make sure I better not pilfer from my father. He actually fulfills the real spirit of that rule because he takes loving care of the king's property. And that rule which says, speak respectfully of the king, well, again, he doesn't keep that in a sort of narrow way a servant might. He speaks of the king with evident warmth and love and joy and affection. He actually fulfills the whole spirit of those rules. Because he's the son. You see the point? He goes so much further than the bare rules. He actually fulfills the real intention of those rules. And it's the same for the believer. He doesn't live by the rules, if I can put it like that. He does nothing the rules forbid. He doesn't follow a narrow interpretation of those rules, saying, well, I better not do that, better not do that. His life isn't dominated by do's and don'ts, because actually what he does, he goes so much further than the rules and actually fulfills the law. That's what Paul is saying here in verse 14. For all the law is fulfilled in one word, even this, you shall love your neighbour as yourself. So he doesn't look at the laws and says, well, you know, I mustn't murder. And I mustn't lie, and I mustn't steal. He actually goes so much further. He says, I will actually, positively, love my neighbour. The law can't tell him to put himself out, can it? The law can't tell him to go around washing feet. The law isn't like that. The law can't tell him to be kind and patient. But that's always been the real intention of the law. But now, by the Spirit, he can do it. He actually fulfills the real nature. He actually fulfills the law, the real intention of those commands. For all the law is fulfilled in one word, even this, you shall love your neighbour as yourself. Does that make sense? So he's not living anymore as a servant. I'll keep the narrow rules, so far no further. In that sense, he doesn't need the rules anymore because he goes so much further than the rules. Because he's in a relationship with the king. He loves him. And will actually fulfill the real purpose of those rules in the first place. Okay, now, you can see what's been going on in the Galatian churches, can't you? Verse 15, but if you bite and devour one another, beware lest you be consumed by one another. Instead of behaving like spirit-born Christians, loving one another, they've been behaving like wild animals, devouring, biting, in danger of eating each other up. And the reason is this, is if you say, as these people have come into the Galatian churches have, you've got to keep the rules, be good Jews, don't touch this, do that, don't do this, do that, do your best, you don't get the spirit of a son who loves his father. What you get is a spirit of a servant. It's all about doing and not doing. You just get the spirit of a servant, the spirit of a narrow law keeper with a narrow interpretation of the rules. not only that, is if you say to them, Christ can only take you so far, you're going to have to finish your salvation by doing your best, what are they going to draw on to do that? The flesh. You end up, you say, I've got to try harder, do better, and you use your own resources, don't you? You use the flesh. And if you try to do godly things in the strength of the flesh, you don't get a godly life. What you get is the works of the flesh. And we're told, verse 19, what they are. Now the works of the flesh are evident, which are adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lewdness, idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, dissensions, heresies, envy, murders, drunkenness, revelries, and the like. Now they may not have all of those at Galatia, but they've certainly, what appears to be, they've got murders, maybe not literal, but verbal murderings going on. And they've got outbursts of wrath and jealousies and selfish ambitions and dissensions. They've got all those going on, haven't they? So that's why they're devouring each other. So that's what's going on. Okay? Live by the Spirit. You have the Spirit of the Son. You'll love the King. You won't have to live by the narrow do's and don'ts because you'll go so much further. You'll actually fulfill the law. It's real intent. But if you, as the Galatians have been told, Christ is going to take you so far, you're going to have to do the rest. Try harder, do better, do this, don't do that, keep the rules and all the rest of it. They draw on the flesh in the spirit of a servant and you get chaos and anarchy breaking out in the church. It's a bit like, isn't it? Imagine you have an operating theatre that's infected by MRSA. And you're trying to clean the operating theatre, only what you're using to clean the operating theatre are the infected materials that you find inside the operating theatre. Right? You think, this operating theatre is filthy, it's full of disease. Look, I found a pile of rags here, we'll use those to clean the operating theatre. All you do is spread the infection even further, don't you? Because you're using something that's defiled from inside the operating theatre. And you might have all your protocols, all the rules which say, well, you must do this, you mustn't do that, if you want to get a clean operating theatre. But the outcome of it is you'll just simply spread the infection further. The only way to sort the infection out is to bring something from outside the operating theatre that's actually clean, and then you can start making it clean, can't you? You can't make people holy by doing holy things in the strength of the flesh. We're simply using the dirty rags inside the operating room. All you do is you'll spread the infection. You'll make things worse. What you need, if people are going to live a holy life, is not the works of the flesh, not do harder, try better, all the rest of it. What you need is the Spirit. Which is why Paul then says, verse 16, I say then, walk in the Spirit, and you shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. So we're getting closer and closer. How can I become holy? Walk in the Spirit. Now, another illustration to try and help our thinking in this. You want to fly. So you step into a very large basket. Are you flying? No, you're not. You're still on the ground. Gravity, the force of gravity, keeps your feet firmly on the ground. But if you then attach that basket to a hot air balloon, gravity is still pulling you down, that force is still there, but there's now a new force, isn't there, operating. That new force is lift, is the hot air balloon. And the hot air balloon pulls you up. So you now have two forces operating on you. There's one. Let's do a hot air balloon. Here they are. There's one force that's... Does gravity pull you down? Is that the right expression? Not a physicist, yeah? Gravity... Sorry? It tracks you. Okay, so gravity's... I'll say it pulls you down. All right, okay. Gravity's pulling you down. And then you've got lift, which is pulling you up. Okay, and they're opposites, aren't they? Now, you're sitting in your hot air balloon... As it begins to take off, you realize that one of those forces is dominant. One of those forces is stronger than the other. It's lift. because you're taking off. I'm going into the air. And as you climb higher and higher, you realize that lift has, at least for the moment, overcome gravity. Now, gravity is still there, isn't it? You know it's still there, because if you stepped out the basket, you'd go straight down again. But as long as you stay inside the basket, there is a greater force that's pulling you up. Okay? Two forces, opposites. They're always at work, but the dominant one lifts you up. You have lift. So that's what really Paul is saying in verses 16 and 17. I say then, walk in the Spirit, and you shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. For the flesh lusts against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh, and these are contrary to one another, so that you do not do the things that you wish. So the two forces, actually not gravity and lift, the two forces are the flesh and the Spirit. If you walk in the Spirit, if you step into our picture, the hot air balloon, then you won't fulfill the desires of the flesh. Actually, what you will do is fulfill the law. You're capable of far greater holiness than just rule-keeping. Actually, fulfill the whole spirit of it, which is love, love for God, love for your neighbor. And you'll rise above the flesh. You'll find yourself living in a new way. That's what verse 18 means. If you're led by the Spirit, you are not under the law. If the dominant force in your life is the Spirit, and he's a person, so we're not saying he's a force, but it's in our illustration it's a force. If the dominant force in your life is the Spirit, then you will not be following the rule book with the spirit of a slave. Your life won't be ruled by do's and don'ts like a servant. It'll be ruled by that of a relationship of a father and a son, in which you do so much further, go so much further, and do so much more. And you'll climb higher, and you'll actually fulfill the real intention of the law, which is a life of love, a life of holiness. So it's saying then, how can I become more godly? It's as we're led by the Spirit of God, when we live as sons, when we have a relationship which is being cultivated, growing, strengthening, when it's all about my relationship with the Lord, when it's all about living for Him, living for His glory, delighting in Him, loving Him, when it's all of that dimensions, then our capacity for pleasing the Father, for doing His will, is something that becomes real and dynamic, and we find we really can live to the glory of God. But if we're not led by the Spirit, so we cut out the sense of a relationship, just becomes a rule book of do's and don'ts that I'm supposed to keep because that's what you're supposed to do. But without any relationship, without any of that dimension, so I'm behaving as a servant, and we try to do holy things in the power of our flesh, our fallen existence, and in fact we'll find we'll never take off. We just stay rooted firmly to the ground, rooted to this cursed world. And in fact we'll be like everybody else. And we've just been through what they're like because of the works of the flesh are obvious. And if that's the only way we live, if we never rise above it, then, says Paul, that it shows you've never been born of the Spirit. Verse 21. And the like of which I tell you beforehand, just as I also told you in time past, that those who practice such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. Now what we'll do, God willing, next time, is we'll actually look at what it means to walk in the Spirit. But hopefully we've said a lot already, haven't we? A son has a relationship. It's a relationship with his father. He delights in his father. He loves his father. Everything he does is by virtue of a relationship which is cultivated, which he wants to be close. It's all a response in a relationship. Servants aren't like that, are they? A different sort of relationship. So I can't be holy just by saying I do this and don't do that. I do holy things, I'll be holy. Walking in the Spirit is all about a relationship. And we'll find out more about that, what that means next week. But just a few questions as we close. We can perhaps just talk about them for a little bit. If you give an unconverted person the law of God and you tell them to do it, what do you get? Yeah, and absolutely right, John. That's one of the things I've written down. What will you get? Okay, okay. If you have the headline which says, "Convent girl," and then some lurid headline underneath, all right? In the world's minds, those two are opposites, aren't they? How could a convent girl end up doing this? But in the light of what we just said, what is actually the relationship between the two?
Probably surprised.
Not surprised at all. Because if you say to a person, a convent girl, whatever it might be, a celibate priest or whatever it might be, or a law-keeping, you know, whatever religion you might choose, and you say, you've got to do this, the only resources they have are the flesh. And what you produce is simply the works of the flesh. It's the natural, obvious, logical consequence of doing that. Now, who is the supreme demonstration of someone who was a fanatical law keeper, and what did they become? Sorry? Paul. And what did he become? What was...
He
became a Pharisee of the Pharisees, and what was his life like? He was an enemy of God. He was a murderer, wasn't he? Breathing threats of murder. The preeminent law keeper of all time is Saul. He says, in terms of law keeping, I am blameless. No one rivaled me. And no one rivaled him in persecuting the early church. Go to Damascus breathing threats. Because that's what you get if you try to keep the law without the works, without the spirit. You just use the flesh. It is your operating theatre, and taking an infected rag and cleaning the operating theatre with it. The more you clean the operating theatre, the more infected it becomes. And that's exactly what happened to Saul. He became the chief of sinners. But he thought he was okay. That's right. It's an outward keeping of it, isn't it? And in fact, you just end up with a very proud Pharisee, don't you? That's right. It is. I mean, it changes the whole. Because the sin is as narrow as keeping the right rule, isn't it? And I've done that, so I'm all right. And that's why, you know, when it comes to certain law-keeping religions, we shouldn't be surprised when we hear the scandals, all the behaviours, all the things that are done in the name of that religion, because that's what you do if you try to do the do's and don'ts. You use the flesh, and that's what you get. Yes. No. Exactly, and that's why Paul says the law actually was given to make you aware of your sin. It's not there to cure your sin. I mean, it's a bizarre thing, isn't it? If there was no, how can I put this? If there was no law to say don't steal, you wonder if there'd be less stealing. Because actually the do not steal stirs people up to steal, doesn't it? But it does, it makes you aware of your sin. Okay, that's an unbelieving situation. What if you have a church, okay? You have a church which is very hot on the law thundering. Okay, so lots of sermons about what a rotten lot you are and what a great lot of sinners you are. Look at the state of you. Okay, lots of sermons on that. and lots of sermons saying, look, that's what God says, that's what God says, that's how you ought to live. These are the commands of God. This is what you need to do. What sort of church will you get? Get a legalistic church, yeah? Yeah, disillusioned, not much love. Throw anything out. As long as they say APC, I don't mind. Depressed, yeah.
Ineffective.
Would you like to go there?
Possibly
hypocritical. Hypocritical, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've written down a few. Exactly, I've written down these. I think you're going to get. You don't get godly, holy people. You get hypocrites. You get people living double lives. So they're great on a Sunday, but you go to their home and see the way they treat each other in the home, where a wife might treat her husband, a husband treats a wife, the way they are towards their children, the way the man is at work. Right? You find he's living a double life. You find the church can be cold, unloving, unchristlike. That there are lots of people there trying to do their best, but basically living really discouraged, joyless lives. In which the Christian life seems to be just an endless round of desperation. I can't seem to break out of, because the more I try to do the right thing, the more guilty and wretched I feel. But it'll be a church maybe that's very orthodox, right? So it's all absolutely bang up to date with this doctrine, and it's a church in which the law thunders. You know, so when the word is preached, everything, oh yeah, you know, we are bad people. We've got to live good lives and please the Lord and all this sort of thing. Now, I'm sure you've come across churches like that. Okay, right. Yeah. And that's what you get. And you get churches which says, you know, if you bite and devour one another. So it explains why churches can become as they are. And the church can have a name for being, you know, Reformed, Orthodox, Bible Church, thoroughly what it should be, and you go there and find there are double lives. It's a miserable place to be. It's fairly joyless. Can't avoid part of it is emphasis, isn't it? It's how much emphasis you place on things. I mean, there are times when the law has to thunder, and there are times when it's very good and very right that you, because Paul's epistles are full of, you know, if you're the people of God, you should live like this. So we must bring out the full weight of New Testament instruction. But what is it that will make people respond to those things? With a desire and with a joy. What is it in the preaching and teaching that makes the difference? I mean, for yourselves, what is it that makes you think, yeah, I want to really... Exactly, that's the crunch, isn't it? It's what place does Christ have in that church? If Christ is central in the preaching, if Christ is central in the lives of the people, if Christ is the heart of that church, if we're all the time looking at Christ, gazing on Christ, rejoicing in Christ, if we love the cross, if the cross is central to what we sing, central to the way we live, central to things we preach, you get a very different sort of spirit, and you get a very different sort of behaviour.
Right, that we should be able to share that with one another as well. There is
very true. And sometimes in churches you have, which are, like are heavy on the law, people do live double lives. I mean, sometimes it is a hypocritical life in that sort of bad way, but sometimes it is that they feel they just can't be themselves. They've got to sort of be a, you know, how you are, I'm fine, I'm trusting in the Lord and looking to Him. And actually they're miserable and empty and sad and they want to share those things, yeah. That's right. I mean, we were, you know, a couple of Sundays ago in the morning, we're saying when the Spirit comes, you know, when Jesus gives His teaching, He says, you know, it's not what you'll experience is not a power or a rush or an ecstasy. What you'll experience is the Father and the Son. So when He, the Holy Spirit, is working in us, and when we're walking in Him, what we should have is an ever growing, deepening experience and relationship with the Father and the Son. God is becoming more and more a delight to me, more and more real to me, more and more felt to me. Christ manifests Himself, doesn't He? So that, absolutely, it's a when the Spirit comes, we talk of it in terms of a relationship which is personal. Okay. So, in a sense, we have answered in lots of ways what it means to walk in the Spirit, but we haven't actually quite spelt it out. So we'll save that for next time. But hopefully, just to think about it for yourselves, just to work through these things. We're living in these two zones. So that's why there's always this conflict. It's why it's much easier to pick up the paper than go and pray. So I feel really tired. I think, oh, I can't pray. Put on the television. Oh, that's interesting. We have that in us, don't we? It's this constant conflict going on. But one, the Spirit, is the one that lifts us. Gravity pulls us down. And it really is this whole thing of walking in the Spirit. It's cultivating a relationship. I'm not a servant who doesn't have a relationship with the King other than just as that of a servant. I'm a son. I'm a child of God who has a relationship of sonship. And it all flows from that. I just think sometimes, I'll just throw it in as well, closing. Sometimes some of us may have grown up in homes where the law thundered. Or some of us may have grown up in homes where it was all do this, don't do that, do this, do that. And my own sense of my progress in the Christian life, somehow I've got it into my head that I'm only acceptable in as much as I'm good at keeping the laws. I'm only loved in as much as I'm good at keeping the laws of God. God only is welcoming and appreciating me only in as much as I'm doing the right thing. And therefore we can get ourselves into that awful spiral and have real struggles with assurance. When actually the answer, the heart of it, is not to try harder, do better, do more of it, and I'll feel more holy, do more of it, and I'll get more assurance. The answer is to come to Christ, to gaze on Christ, to love Him, to rejoice in the cross. He embraced, He loved a sinner like me. He loves me. He's not going to stop loving me, because He never started loving me. He's loved me from everlasting. And the cross wasn't the time when He thought, oh, I'm going to love these people. The cross was the demonstration of a love which began in eternity past. He's not going to let me go now. He's rejoicing in the love of Christ and knowing Christ is the heart and marrow of these things.